So, thank you all for coming. Today's class in the beautiful Bhagavatam by Krishna Dwaipayan. Today's verse is 10th canto, chapter 2, text 10. Archi Shanti.
Archi Shanti.
Manushas. Twam Sarvakarma.
Sarvakarma.
Actually, that's Sarvakama.
Sarvakama.
Vareshvari.
Vareshvari.
Dupo Para.
Para. Para.
Balibi. Sarvakama.
Sarvakama.
Varapadam. Archi Shanti Manushu Manushastwam. Archi Shanti Manushastwam. Sarva Kama Pravek Vareshvari. Dupopara Dupopahara Balibi. Sarva Kama Vara Padam.
Sarva Kama Vara Padam.
Archi Shanti Manushastvam.
Archi Shanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Dupa Para Pahara Balivi.
Dupa Para Balivi.
Sarva Kama Vara Padam.
Sarva Kama Vara Padam.
Archi Shanti Manushastvam.
Archi Shanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Dupopahara Balihi.
Dupopahara Balihi.
Sarva Kama Varapadam.
Sarva Kama Varapadam. Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Dvaupahara Varihami.
Dvaupahara Varihami.
Sarva Kama Varapanam.
Sarva Kama Varapanam. Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Dvaupahara Varihami. Sarva Kama Varapanam.
Sarva Kama Varapanam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Sarva Kama Vareshvarim.
Dvaupahara Varihami.
Dvaupahara Varihami.
Sarva Kama Varapanam.
Sarva Kama Varapanam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Archishyanti Manushastvam.
Sarva Kama
Varapanam.
Very good. Archi Shanti.
Archi Shanti.
We'll worship.
We'll worship.
Manushaha.
Manushaha.
Human society.
Human society.
Twam.
Twam.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Sarva Kama Vara Ishwaram.
Sarva Kama Vara Ishwaram.
Because you are the best.
Because you are the best.
Of the demigods.
The demigods.
Who can fulfill all material desires.
Who can fulfill all material desires.
Dupa.
Dupa.
By incense.
By incense.
Dupahara.
Dupahara.
By presentations.
By presentations.
Balibi.
Balibi.
By different types of worship.
By different types of worship.
Through sacrifice.
Through sacrifice.
Sarva Kama.
Sarva Kama.
Of all material desires.
Of all material desires.
Vada. The blessings.
The blessings.
Pradam.
Pradam.
One who can bestow.
One who can bestow.
Translation. By sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia because you are supreme in fulfilling material desires of everyone. So I say, you can repeat. By sacrifices of animals.
By sacrifices of animals.
Ordinary human beings.
Ordinary human beings.
Will worship you gorgeously.
Will worship you gorgeously.
With various paraphernalia.
Various paraphernalia.
Because you are supreme.
Because you are supreme.
In fulfilling the material desires.
Fulfilling the material desires.
Of everyone.
Of everyone.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:20, kamashtashtair kritagyana prapadyante nya devadaha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. Therefore, the word manusha, meaning human being, here refers to one who does not know the actual goal of life. Such a person wants to enjoy the material world by taking birth in a highly elevated family with the benefits of education, beauty, and immense wealth, which in this material world are desirable. One who has forgotten the real aim of life may worship Goddess Durga, Maya Shakti, under various names for different purposes and in different places. As there are many holy places for worshiping of Krishna, there are also many holy places in India for the worship of Durga Devi, or Maya Devi, who took birth as the daughter of Yashoda. After cheating Kamsa, Maya Devi dispersed herself to various places, especially in Vindhyachala, to accept regular worship from ordinary men. A human being should actually be interested in understanding Atma Tattva, the truth of Atma, the spirit soul, and Paramatma, the supreme soul. Those who are interested in Atma Tattva worship the supreme personality of Godhead. Yashmin vijante sarva evam vijantam bhavati. However, as explained in the next verse of this chapter, those who cannot understand Atma Tattva, apasyatam Atma Tattvam, worship Yoga Maya in her different features. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.2, it says, Shrotavyadini Rajendra Rinyam Santi Sahasrasaha Apasyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Those who are interested in remaining in this material world and are not interested in spiritual salvation have many duties. But for one who is interested in supreme salvation, the only duty is to surrender fully unto Krishna. Sarva dharman parityagya mamekam saranam braja. Such a person is not interested in material enjoyment. Once again the verse, by sacrifices of animals, ordinary beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia because you are supreme in fulfilling material desires. This is Krishna speaking to Maya Devi, Yoga Maya. Om Jnanatam Rindasya Dhananjanam Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadakti Swapadam Tisam Pancha Kalpata Rubyas Cha Kripasa Rupi Cha Patitanam Pava Nebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So, here we are. This verse kind of sums up the essence of practically all religion by ordinary men on this planet today. You see, people go to the Supreme Lord and they're always going with a handout. You know, I think we were talking about this last evening. People go to the Supreme Lord and their mood is to say, oh, good morning, Lord, or good evening, praise you, praise your name, hallowed be your name. You're so great and wonderful. Now that we've got that out of the way, here's my list of things that I want. This is my want list for today. Sometimes people will say, I have a friend in Dallas that was telling me that she goes to the Christian church, and she said that sometimes she just gets so sick and tired. She's also a very nice devotee. She's very soon to be initiated. And she's still full-time Christian. It's interesting. The two can go nicely together, very nicely. But when she goes to her church, she gets a little disgusted. And sometimes people are saying this wish list, you know, let's all pray for this. I remember I was in church one time. My sister, a few years ago, twisted my arm to go to her church, so I went. And at the end, people were saying things like, oh, let us pray for my relative. They're in Florida, and they're coming back to Tennessee. It's a long drive. Lord, please ride in the car with them. Please go with them and protect them. You know, well, it's a long drive from Tennessee, you know, to Florida. It's 10 hours. Who would wish that on God? I want you to ride in the car. You're talking the Supreme Godhead here. You want me to ride in their car? If we're going to ask the Lord to do something, we would want him to have maybe a flower airplane, you know, or a golden car. Ride in that car with him. But there's no thought put into it. This isn't an exchange of love. You see, it's like, hey, you, give me this. Take care of me. Do this. You see, give me. Yeah, you do for me. So, and this outlines it here by sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings. Now, notice we're pointing out these are ordinary human beings. Will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia because you are supreme in fulfilling material desires. We've gotten away from that in many parts of the world. This is not really gorgeous worship. We come together, we talk a little bit, and then, okay, my dear Lord, have you got your pen and pencil ready? You know, your pen and paper? Because here comes my list. You know, of course, maybe God's got an iPad and he can type it out as fast as you can say it, you know. So, you know, it's kind of like that. We're expecting them to do like that. People are not interested in so much the self. Who am I? You know, my dear Lord, who are you? How do we relate? What can I do for you? How can I serve you? You see, we don't get that far in today's, practically speaking, most of the religious practices in this Kali Yuga. You see, it's basically minimal. We do the minimum required. You know, it's not a gorgeous worship. The type of worship that Krishna is talking about here used to be very, very gorgeous, you know, with wonderful ornaments, you know, for Durga Devi, great, you know, the paraphernalia was golden or whatever, you see, animal sacrifices. This was a great thing. Durga, people were approaching her not out of love. They still don't approach Durga Devi out of love. Yoga Maya, she's not approached because, oh, my dear, people go to her because they want something. I want material, I want, and it's described here, I want a good life, I want wealth, beauty, you know, like that. Good education, good, may I have good business, you see. So, and it's not that people are bad. Sometimes when we talk like this, people feel like, well, you're really down on people, aren't you? Well, no, it's not that. We're simply trying to point out that there is a proper mode, you see. There is a proper mode to worship the Supreme Lord. You see, first we have to get over ourselves. We have to stop gimme, gimme, gimme. I want, I want, I want. We're so covered up by material desires in this material world that it even fades over into our religious purposes, our religious practices, you see. I'm so interested in what I want, and I'm so covered up with the desires of those that I'm responsible for, my wife, my children, maybe my parents, whoever. They all have desires too, you see. So the poor family man, he has his own material desires that he has to wrestle with. Then he's got the family members, and they all have their own set of material desires. You know, Daddy, I want a laptop. Daddy, I want an iPad. Daddy, I want this. I want, I want, I want, I want a new pair of shoes. You know, I want some fashionable jeans. And, you know, it just, it goes on and on and on, you see. So one gets covered up. So what can I do? I'm so desperate here. I need my desires fulfilled. I need the desires of all these other people fulfilled. Oh, God, help me. Who else can I go to with all these desires? I have to go to God. Okay, good. Now that I've got your attention, Lord, start writing. You know, here's what I want. You see, these are my marching orders for you today. Man proposes and God disposes. So, and it's like that. Not that we're bad. We're just overcome by the material energy. We're not bad, we're pure, you see. When it's just like distilled water, you know, when distilled water is 100% pure. It's like when the sun takes the water out of it, it could be a dirty pond, you know, with pond scum and whatever, but the sun can distill the water out of that, and it goes up, turns into a cloud, and that cloud is pure, 100% pure. Uncontaminated, there are no minerals in it, there's nothing, it's just pure water. So when that cloud comes in contact with a breeze cool enough, it will precipitate, it will rain. So when that raindrop forms and starts to fall, it's 100% pure. But as it falls through the dirty atmosphere, it picks up some contamination. And then it hits the ground and becomes contaminated. You see, so we're like that. We start out completely pure when we enter this material world. We're totally pure, completely innocent, you see. And that's our nature. Our nature is that of purity. But we've become contaminated by our association with the material energy, you see. So now things are twisted with us. See, we leave a situation of where we think of Krishna. We think of Krishna always and Krishna's needs. Now, some people may say, oh, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. God doesn't need anything. You see? Well, but that's not a platform of love. You see, the gopis would worry about Krishna when he would go to the forest, take the cows to the forest. They would worry. What if Krishna steps on something sharp and hurts his foot? You see? All day they're thinking, oh, I wonder if Krishna has enough to eat, if they have lunch. Did they take enough to have lunch? And I don't want Krishna to be hungry. You know, does he have enough fresh water? You know? I don't remember if I made a nice enough garland for Krishna this morning before he left. to go to the forest, you see. Oh, and I was going to comb his hair. Before he left, I was going to comb his hair and put the flowers in his hair, like this different way I was meditating on. I was dreaming about that before I woke up this morning, about how to arrange the flowers in Krishna's hair. And I forgot about that because I was doing something else for Krishna. You see what I mean? This is Krishna consciousness. Now, a mundane, ordinary person would say, why do you worry about God? He's not going to hurt his feet. He can step on anything, it's not going to hurt his feet. You see? And let him do his own hair. Well, he's all powerful. He's a smart guy to take care of himself. Why do we have to worry about him? What about me over here? I've got all kinds of needs. You see? He's a tough guy. He can take care of himself. I'm the weak one. I need help. You see? So, that's material consciousness. And it's missing what? What's missing? What's the difference between that those two consciousness? Love. Love. When you love Krishna, you worry. You don't think of him as, well, he's a big guy, he can take care of himself. You worry. Oh, what if he steps on something and hurts his foot? You see? You know, it may turn up cold today. I don't know if he took his chatter with him. You see? This is constant meditation on Krishna in separation. He's gone. He went to the forest with the cows. And so, now, but my mind has gone with him. I'm seeing every step he takes. Watch out for that. Don't do this. Please, oh. Are you cold? Do you have enough to drink? Do you have water? You know. It's just like a mother with her child. You see, we can see like that. The child goes off and the mother's thinking, oh, did I pack enough lunch? Did I do this? Did I do that? You know. You see. Wonder what my child is doing right now. You know? The parents are like that. You see. So just because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't mean we can't love him. Well, some people have difficulty with that. They truly do. They actually see no reason for loving God. And they say, well, you can, of course we love him, he created us. Well, you know, this is kind of like junior league love. You know, this is, I don't know if this would qualify as love. This is more like liking a lot. Or liking, you know. Or I have an appreciation. He created me. So, thank you very much. And, alright, get your pen ready, because here's my list of things that I need for today. Okay. You great guy. Creator. Supplier of my desires. Gee whiz, how could I not like him? You know? So, you can tell that this is based on the impersonalistic approach. You know, Gino Prabhu and I were talking last night. I was speaking with Jaidwaita Maharaj, and we were talking, we were just kind of, you know, just like a couple of kids just rambling off and talking like little boys, you know. And we were saying, you know, when we first came to the movement, we started reading Prabhupada's books. And we noticed very soon in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada starts talking about the impersonalists, these Mayavadis. And I thought that was very interesting. And then a few pages later, Prabhupada's talking about the Mayavadis again. And then a few pages later, Prabhupada's talking about the Mayavadis again. And then chapter after chapter, Prabhupada's talking about these impersonalists and the Mayavadis. And we start to wonder, who are these guys? What did they do to Prabhupada? Who are these people? And why does he talk about them so much? And then we came to the stark realization one day, I'm the Mayavadis. He's talking about me. He's talking about us. We are impersonal. See? It's like sometimes you I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but you get around someone who is who once had a drinking problem. You know, they were an alcoholic. And they've got they sought treatment. They refer to themselves as a recovering alcoholic. You know, they don't say I'm a cured alcoholic or I was. They say I am a recovering alcoholic. Meaning I could fall off the wagon anytime if I'm not careful, you see. So I like to think of myself as a recovering impersonalist. You know, I'm not there yet. But it's so ingrained in us, this impersonalism. Even though some people can look you right in the eye and say, no. I've got a friend in Tennessee who married a yoga instructor. He's been a devotee for a long time. And he really thought this was going to work out. This is his third marriage. He thought this time I'd really hit a home run. You know, I found a yoga instructor. Now, she's not a Hare Krishna, but she's into Eastern philosophy. She likes Indian food. She's a vegetarian. And she does yoga.
Yeah, there you go.
She likes India. Oh, this is wonderful. And I said to him when I heard about it, I said, this was a few years ago, I said, well, but you know, most people tend to be a little impersonal. Are you sure she's not impersonal? Oh, no, she's not an impersonalist. She's a Shivite, a Kashmiri Shivite. They worship Shiva. And I said, are you sure? He's, oh, come on. No, it's not. She's not impersonal. And then, so when I met her, I traveled to Tennessee and I met her. We talked about philosophy and impersonalism. And she said, oh, I know you Hare Krishnas are real touchy about that. Now, I assure you, we Kashmiri Shivites are not impersonalists. We are not Mayavadis at all. I said, oh, really? She said, yes, because we worship the form of Shiva. And I said, oh, well, that's very interesting. So she's raving, you know, positively, no way are we impersonalists. We worship the form of Shiva. And I said, well, what's it like when you're liberated, you know, in a liberated situation? What do you and Shiva do? What are your pastimes? I mean, at the time of liberation, you achieve Shiva? Yes. I said, well, what's that like? I'm not familiar with what you would do with Lord Shiva in the liberated stage. And she goes, oh, well, there's no doing. You see, and Shiva only takes form when he comes to this material world. In liberation, of course, like you dummy, like you should know this, liberation, everything is unmanifest. Shiva's unmanifest, I am unmanifest. Manifestation is unmanifest, you know. I mean, she was almost pounding on the table telling me, I am not a Mayavadi. They don't know. They don't know, you see. So, it's just like an alcoholic. They, you know, sometimes there has to be an intervention before they realize they have a problem or somebody with drugs or things like that, you know. Sometimes we have a problem and the world has to hit you between the eyes. You know, maybe if you have a drinking or an intoxication problem, you might have to get into an automobile accident or get a DWI. And even that doesn't do it. Whatever your problem is, it has to cause you great suffering to get your attention, you see. So, the world is operating like that, you see. We've become impersonal. We are personalist by nature. It's our nature to be personal, you see. But we've pretty much turned our back on having an association with Krishna because we want to have an association with us. I want to have an association with me. I want to put my attention into me. You know? It's like we were talking yesterday. I want to learn to love me. you know, I've been investing all this love and everything in this Krishna. And, well, let me try, what's it like if I give it to me? You know, I want to take care of me. I want to be good to me. You know? So we come to this material world and we've lost our personal connection with the Supreme. Not only that, but this consciousness causes us to lose our personal relationship with each other. You see? If I can't get anything from you that I might want, then I don't really have any need for you. You know, you could live next door to me. What do I need with you? I don't have any need for you. What do I care? It's not that I hate you or dislike you. I just don't care. I may wish you well. No, off you go. Do well. Just stay out of my way. You see? You can see the way people drive on the freeway. You can see impersonalism there. I mean, you can see, you can taste it. I mean, I spent a lot of time driving on the freeway. Let me tell you. You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going along and, you know, I'm old and a little stupid and I don't know, I can't see well, so I don't, sometimes it takes me to the last minute to realize that the lane over here is going to end because I saw the sign and I'm thinking, oh, the lane is going to end. Oh, wow, the lane's really, it's ending. So I need to move over. Well, the guy right back here is thinking, oh, you dummy, you're about to lose that lane. You're probably going to want to get in front of me. Well, I don't want that. So he speeds up. So now he's beside me and the lane's in me. You know, I'm thinking, well, that was kind of impersonal. It wasn't very personal, you see. So I find myself trying to do the opposite. You know, I'm thinking, all right, if I'm thinking he's impersonal, then I have to behave in this machine on a personal basis. So I'm going to let people in. You know, maybe that'll help me out of this impersonal trap that I've got myself into. So we're starting to be a little bit more conscious of being personal, you see. But there are many things people do that are very, very impersonal. We can analyze ourselves and our fellow man, and we can see the impersonal things that we do, you see. Personal things would be to think of your well-being, even if I don't know you, even if I've never met you. Thinking of the well-being of everybody, you see. That's very personal. It's a crude example, but the way people behave in bathrooms. You know, you may know, you know, that a towel falls on the floor, let's leave it. Somebody will pick it up, I don't care. You know? But maybe you may not know who it is that has to pick that up, or who's going to be in the bathroom after you. I'm talking about when you're traveling, or, you know, like when the people come here. You may not know who it is, but I'm going to do something nice for them. I came in here and the towel was on the floor. So not only am I not going to put mine on the floor, I'm going to throw mine away, but I'm going to pick up this one too. You see, just a little. So, anyway, by starting to become personal with Krishna, we start to feel obligated to be personal with our fellow living entities. You see, how can we be personal with Krishna and impersonal with his parts and parcels? First of all, Krishna's not going to like that, you know. And how are we really overcoming our impersonalism if we're not personal to everyone? I mean, it's kind of like one of those things, either you is or you ain't, you know. Either you're personal or you're not. Either you're impersonal or you're not. Listen, yeah, pregnant. Either you're pregnant or you're not. There's no, what is that they say? There's a saying, You can't be a little bit pregnant, yeah. Yeah. Either you is or you ain't. It's like that, you see. So I can't say, well, I'm personal with Krishna and not even care anything about my fellow man or whatever, you see. I don't think Krishna's going to buy that. I think he's smart enough to say, yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you've got yourself convinced that you're personal. You know. So, and again, maybe I'm trying to be personal with Krishna because of some benefit. So, any questions or comments, by the way? Anybody have anything that they've been thinking about? Yes, Lauren?
In the Gita, it talks about how difficult it is for us to know Krishna on a personal level. And it says one of the reasons is because demigods don't know Krishna and they're like higher than human beings. And how is that true that demigods don't know Krishna? They don't have a relationship with him? It's personal?
They don't have a relationship of bhakti, you see. We were all demigods at one time when we came here. When we checked into the material world, we were given that position of Lord Brahma because we wanted to be the supreme controller. We wanted to be the center of attention, you know. So Krishna gives us that opportunity. So, but along the way, we have a tendency to start focusing again on ourselves, my great might, my beauty, my potency, the great power that I have, whatever. They're not the only way to understand Krishna. I think it's the 7th chapter, 1st verse. Krishna's talking about those. If you become my devotee and render loving devotional service to me, ultimately you will know me in full, you see. But it's through devotional service, it's through love.
So demigods don't have that love?
It's not that they dislike him. They're not focused on bhakti yoga. They're not focused on serving Krishna with love and devotion.
So specifically, who are the demigods referring to?
The demigods are basically, they're going to be dealing with Lord Vishnu, which is Krishna, but Krishna manifests Lord Vishnu for the dealings of the material world, creation and maintenance and like that, you see. It's like Lord Brahma. He didn't understand Krishna when he was on the planet. He didn't understand. He saw Krishna with the cowherd boys, so he wanted to get a little closer and kind of figure out this Krishna. So he stole the cows and the cowherd boys, you see. He stole them and put them in a cave. And then when he went back to see Krishna, to see how Krishna was dealing with that, he saw the cowherd boys and the cows were there. Krishna had manifested himself as the cows and cowherd boys, you see. And actually a year had passed, you see. So, you know, he was astounded. He was amazed, you see. So they don't have, they're not particularly bhakti yogis. They have some understanding of Krishna. They have a very high position, but it doesn't mean that they're pure devotees. See what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it's just surprising to me that they wouldn't be.
Hmm?
I guess it's just surprising to me that they wouldn't be.
Yeah, because we think, well, they have a high position.
Mm-hmm.
So they should, you see. But that high position, it's basically a material position. The heavenly planets are still in the material world. You know, to achieve one of the demigod's planets, if you worship a demigod at the time of death, you go to that demigod. So to achieve the planet of the demigod is not liberation.
Can the demigods be liberated?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're living entities like us. They're just in very high places. Which in a way is kind of a problem for them, you know. They've got all this potency in there, you know. They're tangled up. They're a little puffed up too sometimes. They're not necessarily pure devotees, just because they're demigods. But we could think, when we first hear about the demigods, we think, oh, well, they're probably, because we think of where they work themselves up to that level, and you know, but you know, it's like in a company, you know, you get this position, that position. Well, in spiritual life, it's not necessarily like that, you know. Work myself up to a demigod, and then I'm liberated. After that, everybody can be liberated. We don't have to be demigods. We can do it. You can do it. You're on your way now. Does that make any sense? Yes, Mother?
We understand from the scriptures that if someone says they're an incarnation of Krishna, then, you know, if they're not, it's not in the scriptures, if it's not predicted, if the mother and father aren't there. But then there's others who either they say or their followers say that they're some type of incarnation of, you know, perhaps like Ganesh or someone. I mean, could they be?
I guess they could. You know, could Ganesh or Lord Shiva incarnate? I guess it's possible. You know, it's like one of these questions of what does it matter? You know, I mean, it's just like there was this story about Srila Prabhupada one time in Vrindavan. He was on morning walk. He's walking through the streets of Vrindavan with his disciples. And he stopped and went into this temple, this small little temple. And in there was this deity. I believe it was a deity of Ganesh. It's either Ganesh or Shiva. But I think it was Ganesh. And so he walked in, paid his dandavats, pranams, and then left, you see. So Prabhupada gave respect to Lord Ganesh, you see. But we don't have Ganesh on our altar. You know, he doesn't worship. He offers all respect, but he doesn't worship Ganesh, you see. So Ganesh has very, and so does Lord Shiva, has great importance, but we're so focused on Krishna that it doesn't really matter, you know. It's just like if we were in some gathering and there was Krishna present and Lord Ganesh is there and Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, we may glance at them, but we're really going to be focused at Krishna, you see. We're going to be awe-inspired by looking at Krishna. Well, it's really cool, you know, I'm seeing Lord Brahma. That's wonderful, you know, but I'm not going to take my attention. So in other words, what I'm getting at is we don't really, we're not so concerned about it. So if somebody says, well, this person is an incarnation of Ganesh, I mean, the first question that comes to my mind is, so what? You know, I mean, so you can go to him and he can give you money. You know, he can fulfill your material desires. You know, I mean, maybe we can invite him to the Sunday feast and give him a special seat and, you know, nice plate of prasadam. Let him lead the arti, maybe, or let him lead the kirtan. I mean, I don't know. So I feel like saying, well, and your point is, because we have Lord Chaitanya. You know, we have Radha and Krishna, and that's very nice that maybe he's incarnated like this, but I can't let anything take my mind off my pursuance of my relationship with Krishna, you see. So, you know, I don't know, It's just, you know, that's another subject we could get into. Sometimes people ask me things like, do you believe, I've had people ask me this, usually down in the Bible Belt, down in Tennessee, do you believe that Lord Jesus Christ was God? And I look at them and I say, how would I know? I don't know. I mean, I know that he was definitely pure devotee, maybe some sort of an avatar. I don't know. It, you know, so, I mean, what a wonderful personality he was. You know, his appearance and what he was trying to do at that particular time with those particular folks was wonderful. But was he God? How would I know? How would you know? You know, you have faith. You see? You have the faith. And Krishna has enthused that faith. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. You place your faith in a certain direction, Krishna enthuses that faith. He gives you that faith. You see, even if you want to worship a demigod, you know, he will give you the proper faith. So, and he's like that because it's not a cheap thing. If you want him, then you've got to pursue him. You've got to say, oh, my dear Lord, I have faith in you. I want you. And Krishna says, oh, okay, here's the faith you need to pursue me. When we find people that are saying, sometimes we find people who are struggling in their spiritual life and they say, well, I just have problems with my faith. Well, you know, it's all your problem. Krishna will give you the faith. You know, you've got to have the desire. My dear Lord, I want to serve you. I want to attain you. I want you and nothing else. And Krishna says, oh, here's the faith you need. That's the Bhagavad Gita. You know, even if you want to pursue the demigods, he'll give you the faith. He'll give it to you. I mean, how kind and sweet, you know. You want me? Hey, here's everything you need. Here's faith. Here's more faith. See, are you really sincere? Okay, where's my pure devotee? Yeah, would you go and become guru for him? Because I'm going to send you to him. Out of my mercy to him, I'm going to give you the guru to him. And I know that you will give me to him. See, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets guru. By the mercy of guru, one gets Krishna. And of course, sometimes false ego says, well, wait a minute. I'm going to go over that guru. I'm going to, or around him, or under him. You know. I'm going to go straight to God myself. Because, you know what? I'm special. Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu, can you read Bhagavad Gita 10, chapter, verse number 2? So actually, I think...
10-2?
10-2, yeah. Krishna spoke about all this questions answered. Talks about the demigods.
Neither the host of the demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulence, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages. Yeah.
He is the source of all.
He's the source. Yeah. They came from Krishna as well. You see. There is, in many ways, are as confused as we are. They've just got really great jobs with, you know, super benefits.
So they got disappointments and sorrows too, demigods?
Huh?
Even the demigods have disappointments and sorrows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes the demons come and kick the demigods out of their planets and out of their homes. You know? So many times through Bhagavatam when you're, you know, Krishna has to come and fix it. The demons get so powerful It's like at this particular time when Krishna's coming, he's coming because the demons had taken over. The demons were causing a great deal of trouble for Mother Earth, Mother Bhumi.
So only the pure devotee who has pure devotion and lotus feet of the Lord, I want nothing, I want only devotion at your feet. Only that kind of devotee is free from disappointment.
Right. Status. The pure devotee of Krishna is far more powerful than the demigods. Far more powerful than... So like if this is Ganesh that's incarnated, give me a pure devotee, give me a Krishna Bhakta. Because he's far more powerful. Why? Because he can give you Krishna. By his mercy, he can give you Krishna.
So, could it be thought maybe that Krishna appointed the demigods, you know, sort of as a lesson too for them? Like...
Well, it's kind of
like... Because they have so much power so that they can, like, see that and maybe liberate, you know, or not want it, maybe?
It could help them, yeah. It also could contaminate them, you see.
So is it their karma, maybe?
Yeah, karma... it's a reward for something. Something that they've done, or some desires that they have, some relationship that they're having.
But how is it rewarded if they don't just have the relationship with Krishna, the love?
They're not attracted to that. Otherwise, they would have never left Goloka Vrindavan. You see, they came to the material world, same reason we did. You know, I want to put myself in the center. I'm not against Krishna. I'm just wanting to see how far can I go if I have some power. And if I'm in the center of attention, you see, I want to see what I can do. So they're just like us. They're wanting to get away from Krishna. They don't dislike him. It's just like, let me see what else is. What else you got? I don't want to depart like that. So they're just, think of the material world as... a big company, a big corporation. And in a big corporation, you've got department heads. Vice president of human resources, vice president of sales, vice president of accounting, you see. So the demigods are like that. They've all got some job that they do. These are the people that Krishna has. You know, Krishna doesn't have to take care of the weather. He has people to do that. He has demigods. You know, Lord Indra. You know, Krishna doesn't have to say, he's, you know, can you see Krishna? He's with Radharani and they're having this beautiful, wonderful talk. And Krishna says, oh, I've got to cut this short. Radharani says, why? Well, I've got to go make it rain. You know, I've got to go do this. Radharani's like, oh, Krishna, you're always having to do something. No, he's got people to do that, you know. The demigods, they're appointed, you know. He doesn't have to spoil his amorous pastimes with Radharani, you know. He knows Indra's going to take care of the rain, you know. He's gonna, so what he does, makes him feel powerful. He throws the thunderbolts, rain. You know, he's really, that's his department, and boy, he's really into it, so I don't have to worry about that. See? So they're like department heads. You know? They've all got their jobs, their various spheres of influence. And it's possible that they could get some spiritual realization from it. But it's also possible that they can fall down from there. Like we did. We were once Lord Brahma. You know? What happened to us? We messed it up. You know?
It's interesting in the mind of man there is this fascination with hero-like powers. I mean, we have a show on TV that's called Heroes, and it's like Superman was real, and you know, all these other characters were coming to be real. were slowly discovering them as the series went on. You got all these things about vampires, and they live forever, and they got all these powers, and you've got,
yeah.
You know, all there's something about our nature that wants power. But what you said earlier is so important, that love is really the strongest power. That's the closest we come to Krishna, is this love that we have.
Right.
And that all that other stuff is just peripheral. It doesn't really matter that much.
That's the real power, love.
Yeah, that's the real
it's
power.
The real power.
And it's what we all need, what we all really, really want. And yet somehow we're fascinated by Donald Trumps and people who can manipulate buildings and do different things. And we think, but that's really not joyous.
Right, right.
It's really not that important.
We need some sort of camaraderie, at least. What is the biggest thing about this? What is the biggest punishment if you're in prison? What's the meanest, nastiest thing they do to you?
Isolation,
solitary confinement.
That's right.
It'll make you go crazy.
Or you get to hang out with other idiots. I mean, that's part of the punishment.
But in order to get away from the solitary confinement, I'll hang around with the people. I'd rather be with the idiots.
Well, there you see?
Right. Because there's some camaraderie. There's a hint of something that might be construed as something like love. You see? So, but if you take, even if you take that away, because you're with slime, there's slime buckets, and you know, but even if I take you out of that and put you in solitary confinement, you'd rather go back out there.
You don't think there's good people in jail that have just made bad decisions?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, like if you're in a maximum security or something like that, even some of those guys, maybe, they just, I mean, they're all pure living entities that are just covered over. You know, they're just somehow or other covered over. They're thinking that they're a criminal, thinking they're a tough guy. You know, they're really pure spirit soul, just like us. We just need to get them to chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna. You know, hook up with a pure devotee, go back to Godhead. You see. We actually have a nice prison ministry. There's a lot of preaching going on in prison. You all know. So, all right. Anything else? It's time to wrap it up. Come to Bhagavad Gita class tonight. Bring questions. Open discussion. We'll talk about anything you want, as long as it has to do with Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.